National Radio Hub. Heidi Exler, welcome to Market Scope for August 2014. Today we open up the archives to something unusual and entertaining.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to the greatest hits of all time on
WTWR Detroit, the Motor City.
It's 4 o'clock at the Renaissance Center, and I'm Joey Ryan. Turn on the GWTWI with John Lennon. Back in 74-50. Whatever gets you through the night, live and let live. 407 with Joey Ryan, playing nothing but the greatest hits of all time. Good to lay them on you. Good to have you around on the other side of the radio.
Your car. It's much too complicated to fix.
You're down in the basement. If you have any questions, just call your Michigan Bell Business office.
Tower Weather.
The National Severe Storms Forecast Center has issued a tornado watch for most of central and southern lower Michigan, and that includes the counties of Lapeer, St. Clair, Livingston, Oakland, Macomb, Van Buren, Washtenaw, Wayne, Lenawee, and Monroe counties. That's from the National Severe Storms Forecast Center, a tornado watch for Lapeer, St. Clair, Livingston, Oakland, Macomb, Van Buren, Washtenaw, Wayne, Lenawee, and Monroe counties, in effect until 8 p.m. tonight Eastern Daylight Time. Tornadoes, large hail, and damaging thunderstorm winds are possible in these areas. Other than that, we'll have mostly cloudy weather with scattered thunderstorms through this afternoon and tonight with a low tonight of 60, warmer tomorrow, high of 85. Currently, 81 under some kind of partly sunny skies at Tower 92. Eddie Sticks at Tower 92 WTWR. Lady. 417 with Joey Ryan playing the greatest hits of all time. Front and center for the Motor City, Lady Diana Ross.
The index of leading economic indicators has plunged. Good afternoon. For Tower 92, I'm Connie Green. All 10 components of the government's index of leading skies. The news is a service of Golden West Broadcasters. I'm Connie Green.
Greatest hits, Tower 92. Tower 92, WTWR, with the Shirelles from 61. And Mama said there'll be days like this. Mama never knew what it was going to be like, really. She could only guess, right? 427, Joey Ryan, playing the greatest hits of all time. Good to have you along in a TGIF edition. Friday, right? You ready to hit the streets tonight, go out and dance and prance and kind of relax and forget about it all. Get together with some people. Do a little boogie. Well, we'll give you a little practice with Sister Sledge. I guess you're warmed up now. Very good. Look at that. GWTWI with you, Master Kayla. I love it. Grazing in the grass. It's 434 with Joey Ryan playing the greatest hits of all time. Digging up the Temptations. Yeah, going back to 66. One of their classics. Could be the truth, you know?
So we'll love set
on the outside. Tower 92, WTWI with the Tempting Temptations. Yeah, that's true, really. It's 436 with Joey Ryan playing the greatest hits of all time, reminding you to join Big Round Tavern, and he has got it for you. Monday through Friday from 10 until 3 on Saturdays from 3 until 7, playing nothing but the greatest hits of all time. And you know, the dude does kind of get on the radio and get a little mellow and kind of sexy, you know. I mean, it doesn't do much for me, but I've had a few ladies call to say they're kind of digging on it.
Hi there, how you doing?
Hey, we're over here.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
I'm starving. Let's eat.
Air pollution. The current temperature, 69 degrees. Sarnia, 68. Cleveland, 72. Toledo, 66. This is Grant Hudson, CKLW 2020 News. Now, more hit music with Ted Richards.
KLW with a bear suggests that you shoot your shot on Friday afternoon at 4:50. That's Junior Walker and the All-Stars.
Some things are the same.
7:30 at Detroit Dragway, Sibley and Dix.
CKLW.
You'll hear the winning lottery number exclusively every Thursday on the Big A.
Please, can I sing you a song?
CKLW.
Teddy Truckin' Bear Richard. And Mo Soul. Brother Tyrone can get on. Oh, darling. I just had the old clock off the wall. You know what I would do.
Oh, darling. I'm so lonely.
CKLW. All hits, all the time.
W at Teddy Bear, 503 in the Motown. It's Billy Preston. Will it go round in circles? Oh, yeah.
Mother country's got her on United Airlines.
United offers more vacation packages than any other airline and all at prices that are friendly to your fun time budget. United, the vacation airline.
Rent four or more tuxedos for your wedding from Valenti's and receive as a gift a 41-piece Libby glassware set. That's Valenti's men's formal wear with 18 convenient locations. Metro Detroit, Kalamazoo, and Grand Rapids.
CKLW.
The Big 8, holding all of the Motor City's top-selling albums. And I'll give a copy of Fresh by Sly Stone to call it number 4 on my hit hotline. And you know the number.
They say for every boy, yeah, with these.
CKLW with a winner every 30 minutes, sometimes more. Congratulating another top 10 album winner, Paul McCartney of Windsor. Your chance to rip off one of the Motor City's bestsellers can happen at any moment with a Bear in 507.
This land we're living in is here for you and me.
Sunday, July 22nd, 8 p.m., Cobo Arena, presented by The Big A.
CKLW.
Good swinging on WAMM Flint, Michigan.
All that music on that radio, wonderful wham.
2 o'clock in Flint. Come on in, you're in where the music is for Wonderful Wham Radio. Jim Taylor Show till 5 o'clock tonight. Right now, Supremes and My World's Empty.
My world is empty without you, baby.
Number 10. There you have it. Diane, Mary, and Flo, the Supremes. Number 10 in Flint from Wonderful Wham's All That Music Survey. That song has been out for about a good 8 weeks now. And it's still a big hit in Flint. 3 minutes after 2. Wonderful Wham, All That Music Time. You're on the Jim Taylor Show till 5 o'clock. Hello there.
Here's Jim Taylor turning Flint Town on Wonderful Wham.
Better hang in there. We got a Wonderful Wham pick coming up next. If you're writing with a Lindy pen, you're writing right, because the Lindy name on a ballpoint...
Learn something about it. Call Heart, 342-2100 for information. Remember, you need to have a heart.
All right. Thank you, Bruce. 4 minutes after 2 for Wonderful Wham. Yes?
Don't touch that dial.
All right.
Oh, yeah!
Oh, yeah!
Oh, yeah!
Oh, yeah!
Oh, yeah!
Cannon's dedication song.
This song goes out to Bobby, dedicated from Sue.
Don't touch that dial.
All right.
I'll be back in a little while.
I don't know about that.
Let me hear everybody say, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's it, the brand new pick from Wonderful Wham Radio, Freddie Boom Boom Cannon. It's called the Dedication Song. You heard it here.
Don't touch that dial.
All right.
Future Scope.
Hey, come on now, Freddie. Come on now. Time for Bob Lynn's The Elusive Butterfly.
You might wake up some morning. I chase the bright elusive butterfly of love.
That's Bob Lynn from Wonderful Wham Radio, number 12, Elusive Butterfly on the Jim Taylor Show. There's nothing I like better than a song about a butterfly. I mean, after all, there are lots of butterflies and there are lots of songs, but never lots of songs about lots of butterflies. As we, 12 minutes after 2, Wonderful Wham, All That Music Time, Contact Radio is what you're listening to.
This is 1420, where we speak for ourselves.
Wonderful Web.
Oh, do I have a great record to play for you next? Hang on.
And that's a most unusual market scope. If you have something you can share with the members, send it in. I'm Phil Wayne. My address is 7545 County Highway 71, Harpster, Ohio 43323-9364. Or you can always send it to Fred at the DX Audio Service headquarters. And now, here are the musings for the members.
This is Musings of the Members.
Hi, DXers. This is Matthew Ellis in Springfield, Missouri. I just listened to the most recent DX Audio Service. A brief local note here on 1060 TBFL AM appears to be broadcasting at night now. They were usually a daytimer, and I think they maybe had critical hours power. I'm not sure about that, but they've been broadcasting at night at a really reduced tower, and I haven't heard them mentioned here. Have they been improved for nighttime operations, or do they have a CT or something? And then I really enjoyed the Casey Kasem thing, and I wondered about the telephone things, the prefixes they mentioned that Mark Sternberger was mentioning. Since I wasn't alive and never understood how it worked from radio and TV shows and stuff from the era, how did those elms and beechwoods and stuff work with the number after it or whatever? How does it work? I've never known. And it would be cool to hear where the conventions have taken place. I just don't have a lot of financial things to go too far. Most of them are always too far away, or now I'd have to take off work to go, and I need a lot of notice. Do so, and the one in Omaha, which just at the time was not good. I just started my job, and I just couldn't do that in Omaha. That was the closest one I've seen since I've done the magazine since 2005. Great magazine as always, and 73, and good DX.
This is Mark. As regards the telephone exchanges, there were actually two different items at work here. One was the labeling of the telephone exchanges, like Blackburn 2. That was done even in the days of the old rotary dial, because they were easy to remember. Remember, the transition then was from operator-assisted calls to dial your own. Folks were used to picking up the phone and telling the operator, "Hello, Central, give me 303. When they had to start dialing it themselves, the phone company felt that people would be confused with too many numbers, so they decided to give you some easier-to-remember designation for the first two letters. For example, 6-8 as the first two numbers, that became Murray Hill because it was easy to remember, and the MU in Murray Hill is the same as the 6-8 on the dial pad. Make sense? The other thing that happened was that after the war, there was such a demand for telephone numbers that the phone company ran out of names. They couldn't come up with easy-to-remember names that fit all the new numbers that they needed to put into service. So in about 1958, the telephone company switched to all-digit dialing, even though you still had to dial the number with the rotary dial. It was about 1963 that the telephone company began to convert to touch-tone dialing, and the revolution was on. I hope this helps give you some background. Let me know if there's further information you'd like.
Hi there, this is Mike Lance in Aventura, Florida. I would like to talk about the National Radio Club conventions. I've attended 23 of them. The first convention I attended was held in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I met the host of the convention, John Malachy. I also met my good friend Ernie Wislowski, Martin Wisniewicz, and I've met so many wonderful people at the conventions that I've attended. I've also enjoyed going on the tours, and I've also enjoyed helping out with the radio station that was set up at the conventions, and I enjoyed playing disc jockey. I'm going to miss the fact that no one wanted to host the convention this year. I hope that there will be a National Radio Club convention next year and many years to come. Let's keep the dream alive, and let's keep the conventions coming. Let me tell you how much I enjoyed the July issue of the DX Audio Service. You had a few articles in there about my favorite subject, pirate radio. We have so many pirate stations down here. Take care, and you have a good day.
Well, good morning, everyone. It's July 21st. I'm Joe Schwab here in Richmond, Virginia.
on June the 1st, WTGM in Chester changed its call letters to WNTW. They call themselves The Answer, just like the station on 600 in Jacksonville. They are a news talk station. They simulcast a morning show at 1650 in Norfolk from 6 to 9, the John Frederick Show. Also on 800 WSVS, I understand, is supposed to change to a all-sports format and get sports from CBS Radio Sports. They now have classic country format from Cumulus Westwood One. So I'll check and make sure that that happens, and I'll report to you. 73 is from Richmond, Virginia.
This is John Wesley Smith from Hallsville, Missouri, and sort of a follow-up to Tim Hendel's comments about talk radio. I have enjoyed listening to WGN late at night when they're not doing sports, and I've spent some time, more time than I should have probably, listening to Pete McMurray and Patty Vasquez and Nick DiGilio, and they get into talking about some totally inane stuff sometimes, but it's a lot of fun anyway, and they do some interesting games with callers and what have you. So there is other stuff out there, and I suppose more so in the major markets. It'd be interesting to know how WGN's ratings are compared to other Chicago stations, and I'm curious to know how their online station is doing. They have WGN.fm. Maybe they're positioning themselves one of these days to have an FM station in Chicago, other than that little thing at 87.7 that does sports. Well, I had a chance to go to a family reunion in the first part of July, and we passed through the Kansas City area. I counted 6 LPFMs, 3 of them simulcast AMs, and I counted 5 stations doing Spanish. I was totally amazed by that. I knew there were at least 3, but... Anyway, I think one of those stations might be doing other ethnic programming as well, but I was just amazed at the number of stations doing Spanish in the Kansas City area.
Hey, John, according to the latest Nielsen ratings for Chicago, here are the top 10 stations in order: WVAZ-FM, WBBM-AM, WTMX-FM, WBBM-FM, WUSN-FM, WKSC-FM, WLIT-FM, and in ninth place, WGN-AM. With a 4 share. The biggest station in town had a 5.9. And number 10 was WGCI with a 3.8. I don't know if you're aware that WGN gave away an FM station many years ago. They had the theory, and I saw the same thing at WCCO. Let's get this FM out of here because we don't believe in it, but let's give it to someone who won't compete with us. And that's what happened.
Hello, this is Mike Terry in Bournemouth, Southern England. Two items on the June audio circle, which I found absolutely fascinating and wanted to thank you for specially. One was the recording of the 1950s US Fabulous 40 station, and the other was the article read out by Mark Dernberger about Dr. J.R. Brinkley's 1930s Border Blaster station and many others. Two excellent items, and I'd love to hear more about those, and any recordings would be fantastic. Cheerio!
This is John Wesley Smith from Hallsville, Missouri. KFAQ on 1170 from Tulsa has been blasting in here at night for the last several weeks with their horrible IBOC hash on either side of their signal. And I'm normally in their know, so I'm just wondering if they're on one of those STA arrangements or if something else is going on. Wonder if anybody else has heard the difference in their signal at night.
Hi, Fred. It's Tom Dimio in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. A couple months ago, you mentioned that a Swiss company was going to start making tape machines again, and you named, I think, 4. I don't have any idea which one. I would hope maybe Studer. Close to 40 years ago, I had the privilege of seeing a 24-track Studer multi-track machine, and it was amazing. It's what a piece of machinery. Thank you. Bye.
This is Tim Hendel in Huntsville. It seems that some people are very fond of leaving questions on the musings line that go something like this. Why does such and such a local station in my market make this or that programming change? I think this question is very inappropriate for the musings to the members, because nobody on the DX Audio Service is going to know why your local station does this, that, or the other thing. Nobody on the DX Audio Service can possibly ever answer such a question.
Mark Dernberger in the Musings Control Room. Right now I have some frank thoughts to share with you, and I'll ask you to hear me out. Crank up the attention and the volume if you need to. It's about the Musings line. First, we always like to thank those of you who are regular contributors. But we also want to ask the rest of y'all, why aren't you using it? The club, you know, pays the significant cost of maintaining this line for all of us to use. Now, you may not think you have anything to add, but maybe just a few words about a particular column or news item you may have liked or disliked on our service. News of your market or recent loggings is always welcome, because among our regular columnists and contributors, we can't possibly cover the radio news in the parts of the world where you live, and we need your help. Some of you have been with us on the DX Audio service from the beginning and have never called the line. So let's put that call at the top of your bucket list. Make this your first time, right after you finish listening to this issue. Here's the Musings number again, 419-741-0205. You know how it feels to connect with a friend you've been out of touch with for a long time. Well, we feel the same way when new voices show up on the Musings line. It means a lot to all of us that you would take the time to make that call, even if all you do is say, "Hi, this is Ken Kenny in Ardmore, Oklahoma. I wanted to say hi to my friends on the DX Audio service." And then, as long as you're on the line, maybe tell us what it's like DXing where you are and where you listen to the DX Audio service. News from your location. If you get a new radio or a product that helps you listen and enjoy radio more, tell us. Call the line and tell us what it does and how it compares to other radios and antennas. Sort of a mini review, if you will. And if you have a really long story to tell, you're always welcomed to send in a column. Remember, member columns are given first priority over national news media reports. So this is a chance for you to contribute. And if you don't want to call us, you can drop us a hello card or note. We can read that for you on the magazine if you're maybe not interested in having your voice on the air. Now, while you're fixing to make that call or write that note, a quick comment to some of our regular contributors about how we're processing calls. In almost every case, as you know, your call goes right to our airwaves. The only editing we've been doing is to close up the spaces, because you know us radio guys can't stand dead air. Some guidelines from Fred. He asks, when you call, you keep your muse relevant to the majority of the members. Now, that would mean that a local FM station in your market may not be news unless they're doing something really unique, meriting attention. We've also had a long-standing informal rule against whining. And I know whining is a subjective term, but some of us are tempted to do it. And we want you to know that we're going to start to follow our editing rule about whining. So that means there won't be as much. So think about what you're planning to say, and if it isn't constructive or newsy or neighborly, it won't survive the razor blade. Finally, for close to three decades, many of us have worked together on this DX Audio service project, and you've been loyal listeners along the way, and some of you are contributors. For the rest of you, help us to keep moving ahead by making the Musings line a better place to go, will you? Why not contribute today and think about what you want to say? We will all appreciate your efforts. Thank you. I'm off the soapbox now, and let's get back to work.
Thanks, Mark. I've been thinking about formats and how they've changed over the years. You know, you listen to music, and sometimes it's old to you, and sometimes it's too new. For example, when I grew up, music of the 40s and perhaps the early 50s was too old for me. And of course, some of the music that I hear now, that stuff that my son plays, is sometimes a little too new. But what makes a format, and how do you describe it? For example, classic rock. Now, when I grew up, classic rock was stuff like The Doors, Steppenwolf, you know, the classic groups. But it seems that classic rock is changing. Here's a story from the Wall Street Journal this morning, which kind of sums it up.
Quick, what bands come to mind when you hear the phrase classic rock? Walt Hickey at 538.com says Led Zeppelin is on his list, same for Motley Crue, Ozzy Osbourne, but he has questions about others. His piece is called Why Classic Rock Isn't What It Used to Be. Walt, what struck you?
I was listening to a classic rock station. I was driving around Philadelphia, and I turned on the radio, and then you hear the Staples and whatnot, and then I heard Green Day come on the radio. And Green Day was what I kind of grew up with, so it was the first time that I really had that sensation of a song that I thought was totally just rock is now classic rock.
I think Pink Floyd, Led Zeppelin, The Who, when I think classic rock. But The Who is interesting because they have an album coming out, I think, this summer, later this year, which I guess not be considered classic rock right away, but yet they're a classic rock band in my mind.
Yeah, well, I mean, even when you see, like, the Stones have had some recent releases, and they're on classic rock stations, because that's essentially what they are now. Classic rock's really interesting to define from a genre perspective, because nobody goes into music with the intention of becoming classic rock.
Yeah.
With other genres, you can say, okay, this band went out there because they want to be an alternative rock band, or they want to be a pop song, right? But with classic rock, it's just kind of something that happens to you. So it becomes really interesting from a data angle to try to figure out what this is. And like you said earlier, Led Zeppelin, Pink Floyd, The Who, these are like the core of classic rock.
All right, so Green Day, for example, fit into the classic rock genre because why? Did anybody give a good explanation?
It really is market forces. They're not as substantial as you might expect. They are played every now and again. We did see a whole bunch of spins from them, even up to American Idiot, which came out in the 2000s.
Yeah.
They're one of those bands that is kind of on the cusp. After 1991, when Nirvana's Nevermind came out, it gets actually pretty hairy to try to find out what exactly is classic rock because of all the splintering that happened immediately
right
after in the rock world. So I would say that they're becoming classic, that they are en route definitely, that some of the early albums for Green Day, like Dookie, are probably definitively classic at this point, but they've still got a ways to go before they're a staple of the station.
We're speaking with Walt Hickey. He's the lead lifestyle writer at the data analysis news site 538.com. We're talking about his piece entitled Why Classic Rock Isn't What It Used to Be. That's interesting, because I guess you could go by, as you mentioned, song plays, right, or albums sold, versus, I don't know, how hard the rock is. There's lots of different ways to measure it.
Yeah, but it turns out that the most reliable one is just to ask people what they think is classic, right?
Right.
So I spoke to folks from the Echo Nest, Glenn McDonald, and the Echo Nest is it's a company owned by Spotify, and Spotify is obviously streaming radio, so they're very interested in what defines these kind of genres. And I also talked to folks from WAXQ in New York, the programming director, and basically just kind of asked them, how do you find out what to put on the air? And they don't come up with it. They really just ask people what they think is classic, and that's always going to be changing.
I thought it was interesting in your breakdown how regional classic rock can be.
Yeah, this was definitely the most interesting thing that we found. It's not only that classic rock changes based on who you talk to, where they, how old they are. It really also depends on where you're born. Now, I'm in New York, and if you turn on the classic rock radio station in New York, you're going to be hearing a whole bunch of Billy Joel. That's not the case really anywhere else in the country, except, interestingly enough, Miami, Florida. In the South, they like hard rock. Out West, they like the Nirvanas, your Creedence Clearwater. Denver likes AC/DC. The Midwest likes the core, like Bryan Adams and Metallica. So it really just kind of depends on where you are in the country, based on what you kind of like.
Thanks, Walt. Walt Hickey from 538.com. His regional breakdown of what's popular is really neat. So in the Northeast, for example, in Boston, the Allman Brothers are played almost six times as much as others. In Los Angeles, it's Pearl Jam. In the Midwest, in Detroit, most popular, Jay Giles Band. Really? Home of Seeger? Then down south in San Antonio, Texas, for example, it's Motley Crue. Tampa, Florida, REO Speedwagon. Really?
Radio legend ending 45-year career. This story appeared on the WAVE Channel 3 website on July 15, 2014, and was written by Ellie Hammond. A Louisville radio legend has announced the end of a long reign as program director and afternoon personality of 97.5 WAMZ. After 45 years in broadcasting, Coyote Calhoun is calling it quits. Calhoun began his first radio job when he was just 15 years old. Though he spent the majority of that time, 35 years, at WAMZ, Calhoun enjoyed stints as a disc jockey at WAKY in Louisville and at a disco station in Houston. Calhoun ended his day-to-day career at the end of 2014, but will serve as a community ambassador for the station, including appearing at special events. He plans to travel, watch a lot of baseball, and continue serving the community.
NPR and APM encourage activation of FM chips and cell phones. This article, written by Shane Tobin in Radio Magazine. American Public Media and National Public Radio issued a note to stations on July 9th, urging them to have listeners contact cellular carriers regarding activation of FM chips. Sprint is currently the only major carrier in the U.S. that sells phones with the FM chip enabled. Verizon, AT&T, and T-Mobile thus far do not provide FM radio service on their phones, although T-Mobile did recently begin offering free audio streaming. The note, issued on July 9 from APM and NPR, urges stations to ask that their listeners contact the other carriers in a show of support for FM on smartphones. It also encourages stations to sign up with Tag Station so that their station's name and logo can be displayed in the next radio app. APM and NPR join a number of other broadcasters in backing the Next Radio initiative to enable FM chips in smartphones and believe that doing so is critical for providing their listeners with up-to-the-minute news, public safety, and weather information. With APM and NPR voicing support for the initiative and Educational Media Foundation recently adding their stations to the fray, MS-owned Next Radio now includes some of the largest players from all major sectors of the broadcasting industry, public, religious, and commercial. In Dallas, Texas, I'm Wally Warro for the DX Audio Service.
I thought I would jump in here on part two with some more in-depth news about a few stations going silent. In Amherst, New York, WPNI 1430 is gone, according to the June 30th FCC actions. In February 2013, Pommel agreed to sell it to Love Radio Church for $100,000, but there was a petition to deny by Eric Scott, and the Love Radio sale was never consummated. By January of this year, Pommel filed for a special temporary authorization to keep the Massachusetts signal silent. It said this AM station does not generate revenues close to what is required to cover the cost of operations. Before the sale announcement, Albany-based Pommel had been LMAing WPNI out to New England Public Radio. WPNI's licensed for 5,000 watts daytime and 11 watts at night. Now it's officially DWPNT for delete it. An AM in Clinton, South Carolina signs off for good. WPCC 1410 says, maybe we could blame the economy, or technology, or competition, or so many other useful excuses. But in reality, the simple answer is, it's time. It appears that a three-year LMA with a helpful neighbor is ending, and the Cruickshanks family is turning WPCC off. The Cruickshanks operated for nearly three decades as Lawrence County Communications. And Sandy Cruickshanks tells the Clinton Chronicle he enjoyed broadcasting local high school events and that the all-sports format worked well for many years. But with the ending of the LMA run by Southern Broadcast Associates, owner of nearby WLBG 860, Cruickshanks says it's time to quietly close the door on nearly 60 years of community broadcasting. The station's licensed for 1,000 watts daytime and 100 watts at night. Northern Michigan's WATZ 1450 Alpena is also turning off the filaments and going dark, according to Michigan Guide. The station says it's been serving the Sunrise side since 1946, tucked away in the Thunder Bay area of Lake Huron. Ross Biederman's Midwestern Broadcasting is signing the 1,000-watter off and transferring the talk format to its new FM, WZTK Alpena at 105.7. Perhaps DX Audio Service member Pat Haskey can tell us what he hears after WATZ disappears. I'm Dave Alpert in Los Angeles.
A 73-year-old listens to a 93-year-old. This article was written by Jim Withers and appeared in Radio World. My brother John knows my affinity for old radios, and he gave me an old Philco tabletop last year. It's a model 41-221. The 41 denotes the year of manufacture, which makes the radio 73 years old, about 20 years shy of being as old as the medium it was built to receive, using the licensing and broadcasts of KDKA as its birth date. I love the thing, and my grandsons are fascinated by it. My oldest, Isaac, had the best question so far. Hey, Grandpa, what are those little orange lights inside? Curiosity about vacuum tubes aside, this little, for its time, AM radio with its dimly lit dial and dusty tubes, got me thinking about the events and programming AM radio has brought to the masses over the years. The Philco Corporation made several dozen radio models in 1941, and most sold quite well. The model 41-221 was advertised for $23.50, and according to information at www.philcohistory.com, 37,116 were sold. Higher-end floor model radios from the company sold for up to $250. The company also built battery-operated models for rural listeners, who often had no commercial electrical service. Battery-operated radios are common enough today, but in 1941 they were a big deal, since Bell Labs was still 6 years away from inventing the transistor. Battery-operated tube-type radios used as few tubes as possible, because tubes are thermionic devices. They only conduct and amplify when heated up. In other words, they are power hogs. Four-tube battery sets were common, and they needed at least two batteries to work, a 6-volt A cell, about the size of a modern lantern battery to power the filaments, and a B battery, which output 90 volts or more to provide high voltage to the plates of the tubes. The whole deal was good for about 20 hours of listening before the Sears wish book had to come out and batteries were reordered. A bit of trivia. Even today, electronic circuits that use tubes refer to high voltage as B+, in reference to the B batteries that powered early equipment. AM radios of the time often included the ability to receive shortwave broadcasts, and the 41-221 had that feature. The rotary dial shows recommended frequencies for receiving London, Paris, Berlin, Rome, and curiously, considering the increasing likelihood of war in the Pacific in 1941, an area around 10 MC for megacycles on the dial simply labeled Japan. Edwin Armstrong had proved the viability of wideband FM in the 1930s, and the FCC authorized that service in 1940 on a band from 43 to 50 megahertz. That spectrum had been occupied by Channel 1 of a new experimental medium called television, which got moved up to 50 to 56 megahertz to make room for the new service. Only 27 FM stations were on the air by January of 1941, which turned out to be a good thing, because they all had to move when the FCC decided in 1946 to play musical spectrum again. FM went to its current band between 88 and 108 megahertz, and TV Channel 1 was deleted completely in 1948 to make way for two-way radio. That is why over-the-air television tuners have always started at Channel 2. A few experimental TV sets, like the ones in the RCA building at the 1939 World's Fair, had a Channel 1 dial position, but those were rare exceptions. All of the above frequency chaos, plus a freeze on station applications due to World War II, meant that folks who parted with $23.50 for one of these utilitarian radios had many fewer stations to choose from than today. The 1941 issue of the Broadcasting Yearbook, in fact, lists only 882 AM stations on the air as of January 1. Four networks provided national news and programming: Mutual, NBC Red and Blue Networks, and CBS. Mutual is totally gone. The Blue Network was separated from NBC Red in 1942 and was sold outright to ABC in 1943 after the FCC filed antitrust action against NBC. And NBC has scaled back its remaining radio network to a shell of what it was in 1941. Of the original four, only CBS and ABC continue to provide meaningful programming to radio stations across the country. I try to imagine where the little Philco was through it all, and who was listening to the epic events of the 20th century on it. at 2:20 p.m. on December 7, 1941, in Washington, the Associated Press flashed a message to all its member stations that the Japanese had attacked Pearl Harbor. Radio didn't get the attack live, but it wasn't far off. Franklin Roosevelt addressed Congress on December 8, 1941, with his famous Day of Infamy speech to announce that the United States was officially at war with Japan. That was carried live on radio. Evening and extra edition newspapers splashed 4-inch headlines reporting Roosevelt's speech, but didn't get the news out until late in the day. All through the war, Edward R. Murrow originated almost daily radio broadcasts, each beginning with, "This is London calling," reporting on conditions in England and throughout Europe. The broadcast cemented Murrow's reputation as a reporter, as well as many of his hand-picked team, including Eric Severide, Charles Collingwood, Howard K. Smith, Richard C. Hodlett, and several others. After the war, Murrow's boys, as they came to be known, some of whom were in fact girls, set the standard for radio news at CBS and later on CBS television. When Roosevelt died suddenly of a cerebral hemorrhage in April of 1945, radio microphones were there to report not only his death, but the funeral, Harry Truman's ascension to the presidency, and Truman's reassuring words to the nation. The Kennedy assassination, now 50 years ago, was covered on all media, but my first awareness of it came when an alert teacher held the high school PA system mic up to the speaker of a nearby AM radio, and the news crackled over the system into Mr. Wolfington's 11th grade English class. In the entertainment arena, the Philco was around to hear the Tommy Dorsey Band with a young featured singer named Frank Sinatra make way for Bill Haley and the Comets. In 1951, Todd Storrs inaugurated what came to be known as the Top 40 format on station KOWH in Omaha, and Bill Haley started getting a lot of airplay, along with 30 to 40 other hits, played over and over, all day long, but not at night. KOWH was a daytimer. Hundreds of other stations quickly followed suit as the ratings for KOWH skyrocketed. By the mid-1960s, FM radio had gained enough of a foothold that some listenership was slowly being siphoned off the AM band. In a classic example of the mice in Who Moved My Cheese, many AM stations clung to top 40 as the ratings were shaved off day after day through the turbulent 1960s and into the 70s. By 1980, it was clear that the major music formats would all end up on FM. President Reagan came to the rescue, however, and the relaxation of the Fairness Doctrine rule in the deregulation push in the 1980s, along with sports, saved the AM band. The Philco, which might have been on the antique mall shelf by then, would have tuned to a new brand of talk radio when an obscure broadcaster with the air name of Rusty Sharp from Cape Girardeau, Missouri, landed at an AM talk station in Sacramento, California. He switched back to his given name, and today Rush Limbaugh is still a major, and mostly AM, radio franchise. Sports is also still an AM powerhouse. I powered up the Philco last fall in time to hear the St. Louis Cardinals whoop it up on L.A. when they earned a spot in the 2013 World Series. Other formats and ideas have been tried. Radio Disney is a neat effort to create a niche listener group on AM radio. Foreign language programming, travel and visitor radio in markets like Branson, Missouri. Religious programming, around at least since Father Charles Coughlin took to the air in 1926. And retro oldies, in which the AM station not only plays old music, but tries to recreate the 50s and 60s sound in its entirety, complete with Sonovox jingles, deep reverb, and old commercials, all compete for listeners today, all on a medium that is more than 90 years old. The 93-year-old medium has had quite a lot to say over the years. Thanks to my brother, my 73-year-old radio is still listening. Jim Withers is owner of KYRK-FM in Corpus Christi, Texas, and a longtime Radio World contributor. He has 4 decades of broadcast engineering experience at radio and television stations around the country.
State of Talk, Moldy and Anthony. This article, an opinion piece from Radio Insight, written by Lance Venta on July 13, 2014. It reads as follows. It's been a record-setting year for many talk stations, as some of the biggest stations in the format continue to set records for the lowest ratings in their format's histories. Cumulus WABC 770 New York has dropped from a 2.2 in April to a 1.3 in June, while Clear Channel's 710 WOR registered a 1.5, thanks to a little bit of a boost from New York Mets baseball. In Los Angeles, 640 KFI was leading the market as recently as 2012. Now it's down to 12th place with a 2.8. Sister 1150 KEIB added Rush Limbaugh in January from KFI and has risen all the way up to 0.8. 890 WLS Chicago was down to a 1.4. 810 KGO San Francisco was the market leader in every ratings period for 27 years until 2010. By the end of 2012, the station shifted to mostly news as ratings continued to drop, but that hasn't helped it, as it currently places 21st in the market with a 1.9. Many other talk stations across the country are down. KFYI and KTAR-FM in Phoenix. WRKO Boston, despite losing 2 of its in-format competitors. KDKA Pittsburgh, KOGO San Diego. WJR Detroit, WBT Charlotte, and many others are at or near station lows. There are exceptions, of course. Heritage news talkers like WSB Atlanta, KMOX St. Louis, and WTMJ Milwaukee are at or near the top of their market ratings, as are public news talkers WUNC Raleigh, WAMU Washington, and KOPB Portland. Public stations are the most listened to talk stations in such markets as New York, Philadelphia, and Nashville. Why are these stations surviving and even thriving while the majority of the format is struggling? The successful stations are shockingly locally oriented, as opposed to relying mostly on syndication. WTMJ is local 5 a.m. to 9 p.m. KMOX is local, outside of Rush Limbaugh, and overnights. Even smaller market stations that are succeeding, such as WHO Des Moines and WNIR Akron, Ohio, aren't as reliant on syndication. What's the last syndicated talk show to become a ratings success across the country? Every politically oriented show is nothing more than a clone of every other right-wing directed show that cloned Rush Limbaugh in the 1990s. Nothing new has been done nationally, especially as the hot talk format dwindled down to just WTKS Orlando and WHPT Tampa. Just like cable TV news, demographics have become a major problem for talk stations as the median listener age creeps higher into their 60s. What about all the younger listeners who would gladly listen to talk programming? Outside of sports, commercial radio has completely abandoned general talk. The era of the shock jock is over, with SiriusXM's firing of Anthony Cumia being one of the final nails in the coffin. Some traditional radio expatriates, like Don Geronimo and Tom Likas, have found niches with streaming shows and podcasts. 6 of the current top 10 podcasts on iTunes are from public radio, while many of the top comedy podcasters have radio backgrounds, including Adam Carolla, Mark Maron, and Chris Hardwick. Perhaps it's time to dig into their world to find people like Pete Holmes, Bill Burr, or Aisha Taylor that can do a different kind of talk show and bring younger listeners back to commercial talk radio nationally. Make the format mass appeal with entertaining topics, other than repeating I Hate Obama for 24 hours a day. Pair some of these broader talk shows with local issue shows and general talk shows like New Jersey 101.5 has done, and you have a way to create a station that people in the sales demographic actually will listen to. Trying to find the next Rush Limbaugh has proven to be a recipe for disaster. The current national talk radio talent pool has been down to former politicians and aging music jocks for years. Relying on the same old for years has done nothing for the industry. It will take some risk-taking. But if nothing is done to the format, there will be nobody with a pulse left listening. This has been the State of Talk, Moldy and Anthony. The opinion piece was published on Radio Insight, written by Lance Venta, on July 13, 2014. And in Dallas, Texas, I'm Wally Warrow for the DX Audio Service.
One of the hottest growing formats in U.S. radio is Spanish language. This article is titled, Midwest Radio Stations Switch to Spanish, by Jessica Montoya Coggins. This article appeared on survivalbackpack.us and was sent to us by member John W. Smith. For many Latinos in Cleveland, Ohio, waking up on January 1st to the sounds of Mark Anthony on 87.7 FM, WLFM-LV, was a dream come true. The arrival of La Mega was a welcome arrival in the state's second most populous city. But the story of the Cleveland station's switch to Espanol and bilingual programming mirrors what other Midwestern radio managers have discovered: the potency of the Hispanic radio audience. Latinos are the only growing population that exists in those markets, and there was nothing for them, said Murray Hill Broadcasting's director of advertising, Josh Gutman. He explained the company's decision to introduce the station in Ohio. Since 2000, the state's Latinos have increased by over 63% to account for about 10% of the state's population. Hispanics have the highest inclination to listen to radio of any ethnic groups. Numbers provided by Nielsen make this pretty clear. More than 93% of all Hispanics, roughly about 40 million, use radio each week. On average, Hispanics spend about 12 hours and 13 minutes a week consuming radio. Mexican regional music is the most popular format. Numbers like this made changing 87.7's formula an easy decision for Murray Hill Broadcasting. They teamed up with TSJ Media, also known as the Spanish Journal Network, to introduce a bilingual format to the frequency. TSJ Media, based in Cincinnati, owns a number of media properties in Ohio, both newspapers and radio stations. With Spanish-language stations established in Cincinnati and Columbus, TSJ Media brought in their same programming director, Daniel Melendez, for Cleveland's La Mega. Initially, there was an overwhelming response from Latino DJs hoping to work for La Mega, said Melendez. He decided instead to seek DJs who might be new to Cleveland or those looking for their first break after broadcasting school. The Latin Assassin, a popular DJ for Ohio's Radio 1, took over nights for La Mega. The bilingual DJ increases the chances of reaching a wider audience, which fits with Melendez's vision. I honestly think music has no language, said Melendez. A wide margin of La Mega's audience may not understand Spanish, but that doesn't diminish their passion for the station, he explained. Audience numbers are just rolling out for Cleveland since the station debuted in January, but Gutman is pleased so far. He does expect some changes as the station works to find its footings. His biggest concern is producing a cohesive station that appeals to all Latinos. We want everybody to listen and appreciate the station and be part of it, and that's very hard to do when you're talking about so many different types of music and culture, says Gutman. For many Hispanic radio stations in the Midwest, understanding their local Latino audience is key. Luis and Lupita Montoto of 1040 AM Radio in Madison, Wisconsin, took a circuitous route toward their current role as programming directors at 1040 AM La Movida in Madison, Wisconsin. The husband and wife duo have always dreamed of having their own radio station. After years of working in central Wisconsin, they got their opportunity in April of 2000. Tom Walker, the president of Midwest Family Broadcasting, had a frequency that was only being used for simulcasting that he hoped to transition to a full-time Hispanic network. Since the station debuted, Wisconsin's Latino community has grown immense and is the second largest but fastest growing minority in the state. Though Wisconsin's Hispanic population is about 6%, the median age is age 23, and many analysts believe the demographic will grow even further. La Movida has been a boon to local businesses. We're the only Spanish radio station in South Central Wisconsin, so it helps businesses that they're trying to outreach, says Luis. But a key feature of La Movida is their involvement with several local organizations that work with the Hispanic community. These include the United Way, the Latino Health Council, and the Catholic Multicultural Center. Romila Schluter, who is originally from El Salvador, said the Spanish language station has been instrumental in informing the community. As a quality improvement specialist at the Supporting Families Together Association, she contributes to a weekly program called Supporting Families, which airs on La Movida once a week during the late morning slot. It's such a good way to be in touch with a high portion of the population, she said. Her organization offers child care resources, which would not have been known to many of Madison's residents if it would not been for hearing it on La Movida. Past shows and transcripts are available on the Supporting Families Together Association blog. People from over 60 countries have logged into their website. A year ago, La Movida expanded to a full radio network with another station in Rockford, Wisconsin. With the support of the Midwest Family Broadcasting Company, the Montotos hope to bring stations to even more communities in Wisconsin. The growth of stations in the Midwest is part of a national trend. The number of Spanish-language formatted radio stations grew from 547 in 2000 to 895 in 2012, according to the National Association of Broadcasters. As of May of this year, Inside Radio now estimates there are 1,049 Spanish-formatted stations around the country. The trend toward Hispanic radio stations is increasing not just among regional stations. The widely popular iHeartRadio from Clear Channel will be debuting its first Hispanic network later this year in a partnership with Grupo Radio Centro, an owner of both Mexican and U.S. stations. As part of the deal, iHeartRadio will also receive digital distribution rights for several of Grupo Radio Centro's stations, including KXOS FM out of Los Angeles. Broadcasters are banking on Latinos' penchant for radio, whether it be in Espanol or in English, for the younger and more assimilated generation. And this story was titled Midwest Radio Stations Switching to Spanish by Jessica Montoyo Coggins, and it appeared on the website survivalbackpack.us. That music signals that it's a wrap for the August 2014 edition of the DX Audio Service. Before we skedaddle out of here, I'd just like to remind you to help us out here at the DX Audio Service. Be a member, not just a subscriber. Send in some articles to us, perhaps by letter or just email to us here at the DX Audio Service, so we have some good content to share with other DX Audio Service members. And of course, if you have a chance to perhaps do a column yourself, all you got to do is send it in to me here at the DX Audio Service. Member columns receive top priority on the magazine. Well, that's it. That's all. There is no more. So we'll see you in 30 days with more DX stuff. Remember, get out and support your radio club. It's important.